In our final case this morning, 2023-0786, the State of Ohio versus Gasper. On behalf of the appellant.
Chief.
On behalf of the appellant, Mr. Hoffman, on behalf of the court, we would like to thank Judge Charles Sulik, who is sitting from the 6th District Court of Appeals for Justice Dieters. Thank you, Judge, for being here.
Thank you, Chief Justice.
Chief Justice Kennedy, may it please the court. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. Mark Gasper was convicted of impairment rape after a jury trial. The jury was instructed improperly.
Okay, so let's start there. Was there an objection to the instructions?
No, sir.
So why isn't this case just a case of plain error? And
I believe plain error occurred because the error in the instruction changed the outcome of the trial. The record demonstrates it.
How does the record demonstrate that changed the outcome of the trial? We can't know what the jury was thinking.
This court can look at the facts, allocate the facts to the different counts, and see that the guilty verdict in count one related to the baclofen evidence. The other counts, all the counts, were intentionally based upon a general deficit, but only count one had that present reduction evidence of baclofen.
Is there another explanation for the acquittals in the other counts? Wasn't there issues regarding whether venue was established by the state?
No, that was brought up with one of the counts, but the argument was made by the state that a continuing course of conduct can fulfill the venue requirement when part of an offense or a continuing line of offenses is committed in the venue where the trial is being had.
Well, counsel, what are you saying is error here, that the jury asked for some clarification on the instruction, or that the judge gave the instruction again, the same instruction?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
So what is it that happened? What was the error here? Is it, in your mind, because the jury asked for a clarification on the instruction as it related to count one, or is it that the judge gave the instruction again as a response to the question, and it was the same instruction that the judge gave before the question?
It's neither one, Your Honor.
Okay.
My the crosshairs is the definition of substantial impairment that was originally given to the jury from State versus Zay.
So just you're saying that the instruction was error.
Correct, because my argument is that the facts were not sufficient to warrant that instruction.
Okay, so there was no objection to the instruction.
Correct.
So you're saying that it was plain error.
Right.
Was there an objection to when the testimony came out about the first allegation, was there an objection about the medication testimony?
No, Your Honor.
Why not?
It might have been strategic. The prosecutor had notified the defense and the court at least twice in response to a written order to show cause for a more specific bill of particulars that the theory of the prosecution was a general deficit and not a present reduction in the victim's ability to appraise the nature of their conduct or control their conduct.
When the question came back concerning that, it didn't say, we all want to know unequivocally that the jury collectively was wondering whether they could take that into consideration. We don't know if it was being raised by one juror and they wanted to alleviate that discussion. It's pure speculation, right?
The
The question.
I don't know who wrote the question or how many people were asking.
Yeah, the question comes back and it says, "Can we take into consideration this?" And that became the subject matter of the hearing that took place outside of the jury's presence. And the judge said, "I'm leaning towards saying no," and giving them guidance on that, and then opted to say, "Just follow the instructions you were given."
Correct. Right. That's how it went.
All right.
And so, the jury asked if medication enters into consideration when assessing or evaluating a mental state. That was the question. And the answer was, you have the instructions. And it was 30 minutes after that, they returned the verdict of guilt to count one and the not guilty verdicts for the other six counts.
Well, but how do those facts relate to your proposition before us that the jury instruction on impairment was wrong or unlawful?
It's sort of tangential, Your Honor. My claim is that the testimony, KW's testimony, particularly in volume 19 at page 890, when they asked her why she didn't tell her parents about this, her response was she was afraid if her parents found out, it would upset her. And that answer demonstrates on her part an ability to appraise the nature of her conduct. If you compare that to other victims, like in State versus Jordan, the victim in that case was on the phone right away after the abuse, calling her parents. You don't have that here, because in Jordan, there was the victim actually genuinely wanted to find out what happened. But in this case, I think there was an awareness already of what happened. And based upon that comment, that answer to the question, it was originally stated in an interview with Ashley Kermians at the Meyerson Clinic, where KW testified that she didn't tell her parents because she thought it would upset them.
So what does the question from the jury regarding the medication have to do with this analysis?
I think it's evidence that under the plain error analysis, that the instruction for substantial impairment, the error with regard to that instruction affected the outcome of the trial. It shows that the jury had laser focus on the Baclofen evidence, and that they used it to decide this case against my client.
So, but I'm kind of hearing three things. One, that the jury asked a question and considered the medication. Or two, that the trial court should not have given, it was error for the trial court to give the instruction on substantial impairment. Or three, that even that instruction was given, the facts don't support substantial impairment here. It sounds like those are the three things you've argued.
It's two and three.
Okay.
I'm saying that it was a mistake, and the reason why it's a mistake, because the facts don't demonstrate, the facts are not sufficient to demonstrate a present reduction, which is what that exclusively that instruction for substantial impairment is. The case was about a general deficit. And based upon that comment from the KW about upsetting her parents, the evidence was not sufficient that the present reduction, the Baclofen evidence, rendered her unable to appraise the nature of her conduct. And I'm arguing that based upon the verdicts and the evidence that relates to each verdict, it's clear that the guilty verdict of count one was based upon or directed or influenced by the incorrect instruction. And so I'm asking that the court would reverse the conviction and order a new trial. If there are no further questions, I'd like to reserve the remainder of the time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Cummings, good morning.
Morning, Chief Justice, Your Honors. I think part of the problem here is that Mr. Gasper has variously argued this different ways throughout his pleadings. I think sometimes he says the jury instruction was error. Other times he's saying the trial court erred in answering the jury. So really, I think what it comes down to is Mr. Gasper wanted the trial court to affirmatively and proactively tell the jury, don't consider that pill evidence. I think that's at the heart of this. I think that's what Mr. Gasper was looking for. And that is just, it's not a supportable position.
But what about his argument that this instruction should have never been given based on the evidence presented?
Well, the state's theory all along was that she had a cognitive deficit. Mm-hmm. The doctor testified in detail as to why he came to the conclusion that she did have that cognitive deficit that precluded her from being able to consent. The whole case was argued based upon that issue of cognitive deficit. There was more than enough evidence for the jury, if it chose to believe it, to find that she did suffer that impairment and it did affect her ability to consent.
But did the state's position or argument change once the jury asked about the baclofen?
The argument never changed. The argument always was that she did not have an ability to consent because of her cognitive deficit. And the trial court gave a jury instruction that referred the jury to the fact that the cognitive deficit was the mental condition that she suffered from that would have made her unable to consent. That was consistently throughout this case.
So is it your position that the state's response to the jury's question, I'm sorry, the court's response to the jury's question did not lean them toward consideration of the medication or lean them away from consideration of the medication?
I think the trial court did exactly the right thing here because I think it would have been weighing into problematic grounds if it changed the instruction or made an affirmative comment to the jury after the fact and said, you know what, in light of your question, yeah, let's go back. I want to tell you, let's not consider that pill evidence. That would be absurd, Your Honors. You can't do that at a trial.
What about, you may consider the pill evidence based on the instruction if you think it's correct.
I think what...
Would that have been improper on the trial court's part?
Well, the trial court ended up just referring the jury back to the original instructions. The original instructions were proper and they were appropriate for this type of a case. The pill evidence was properly admitted in any case. It was part of the setting of the case. You take your victim as you find them. The definition of substantial impairment contemplates a present condition, and that certainly would go to the victim's present condition when he chose to make his move on her at that time. The fact that she took the sleeping pill was probably known to Mr. Gasper because he was her caregiver. It goes to his knowledge of her condition, of her state. He worked with her, he interacted with her, he knew she had a cognitive deficit. He understood probably that this was as good a time as any to make his move.
Counsel, how do you explain the acquittals on the other counts?
I don't know. I don't attempt to.
Her mental state of the victim didn't change throughout. Are there other explanations?
It would be complete speculation, and that's why the courts don't engage in that. I do know that the jury said, do we consider the pill evidence about the mental condition? And I think that it's interesting if you really ask what the jury is asking. They're not saying, is it determinative? They're not saying, is this something that we are going to hang our hat on in deciding the issue? They're saying, is that something to consider? They did, and then again, you'd have to speculate, did they consider it to the extent of 1%? Did they give it 5% consideration, 50%? Maybe they gave it zero consideration. You can't tell. It's all speculation. But in any case, the trial court was correct to let the jury decide the case on the evidence admitted, and it was correct not to say proactively ignore that evidence because the evidence was properly before the jury.
Do you see this wording in the statute to say present condition, meaning you interpret that as you find the victim, as you said, regardless of if it's a permanent condition? You don't see any distinction between present being distinguishable from permanent?
Well, I think if you have a permanent condition, it's always
it's
going to
always
be present.
Present.
I think what's key here is that Mr. Gasper is trying to make this issue about a temporary condition, and somehow the jury's question indicated that they were going to decide this case based on a condition that was temporary. But there was never any evidence in this case about a temporary condition. The whole theory of the case was what this woman had a cognitive deficit she suffered from permanently. That made her vulnerable in any day, in any state. Certainly, to whatever extent the sleeping pill might have affected her, it was secondary and anecdotal to the point that she has a cognitive deficit to begin with. So I really think the trial court would have been weighing into very uncharted waters to try to change the jury instructions and tell the jury to disregard evidence after the case was submitted to them.
So as for the motion for a new trial, I mean, I think it'd be fair to conclude from the jury's verdict that it at least found the state's expert on impairment and cognitive ability to not be extremely credible with the acquittals on all the other rapes that were charged that didn't include the medication.
I can't agree to that, Your Honor. I don't really know what they thought. I think it's dangerous for us to speculate about that, but
what conclusions? You had two different experts, and there were objections, and they were overruled on both parts. And I mean, didn't the jury need an expert opinion to at least satisfy that element in the crime of her being substantially impaired?
Well, the jury did. It had two expert opinions. One said she could consent, and one said she couldn't, based upon her cognitive challenges. I think they were both aware that she had taken the pills, but neither one of them made that a fundamental point in their opinion. I think they mentioned it in passing, but not because it was determinative, but just because it was part of the setting of the case. They did mention it, but the jury had the benefit of two experts on this issue, and they chose to believe the doctor that said she was unable to consent. I think that's...
any court of appeals looking at sufficiency of the evidence is going to look at what that evidence was that was there when they have to judge that. I mean, to some extent, on manifest weight as well.
Well, let's go for a moment. Let's indulge the idea that the pills should be looked at and that should be explored. The defendant would still have to show prejudice. And if you look at page 4 of the defendant's new trial motion, he does a very good job of explaining how the sleeping pill had no effect on her ability to resist. She pushed his hand away. She pushed his head away. She resisted as best she could. Mr. Gasper himself was arguing that the pill did not affect her ability to resist. So for him now to argue after the fact that it did, and this must have been what the jury concluded as well, is pure speculation. And I think it's very problematic to reverse a case like this when the state's theory was sound, it was supported by their expert, the jury instruction as given was proper. There's nothing about a temporary condition in the state versus Zay definition. That is a construct of Mr. Gasper's that just is not supported by the case law. Nobody was ever arguing this was a temporary lack of ability to consent. All along, it was argued as a permanent inability to consent based upon her cognitive deficits. So I think really this was kind of an unfortunate question because it really threw a wrench in everything temporarily. Even the trial judge initially thought about it, but from the state's perspective, thankfully did the right thing in the end by saying, you know what, I'm just going to tell the jury to go with the instructions as given. And the jury was instructed just to consider the mental condition, not the pills, the mental condition as her inability to consent. And I think we presume the jury follows what the judge instructed them to do. I think it would have been error if the judge had, you know, varied beyond that.
Counsel, the other side concedes plain error is the standard. why was there not plain error?
Plain error in the giving of the instruction?
Yeah, but they can see that because there was no objection, and plain error is the standard. So why was there no plain error?
Well, because the instruction was appropriate. It's the instruction that's been approved by courts, including this court, for this type of situation. State versus Browder, I think, had a very similar situation where a woman had a cognitive deficit. The same definition is given. It's been found constitutional. It's not vague. It's been used. It's been workable. And obviously, because the basis upon which the state prosecuted this case is supported by the evidence the state presented, there's no prejudice here. There's no error. And Mr. Gasper was on notice all along about this pill evidence. It was in the Marison interview. It was discussed throughout. He was not surprised by this, and he could have handled this proactively during the trial if he wanted to be cautious and go out of his way to say, okay, let's clarify the issue here. We understand there, you know, a sleeping pill was taken. He had that opportunity. He didn't take it. So I think that at the end of the day, any issue is waived, but there's no error in the first place. The trial court did everything right here. The theory was sound, and yes.
State v. Zay, if I said that correctly, differentiates between what I misstated a minute ago, which was substantially impaired, as the present reduction, diminution, decrease in the victim's ability to appraise the nature of conduct or to control conduct, and that being distinguishable from a general deficit in ability to cope, which could be inferred by intelligence or IQ report. So what the jury was provided with was really just the substantially impaired. So it applied that. Let's say that there was plain error. Do you think that it's harmless based on the verdict?
Absolutely. I don't think there was error, though. I think that the Zay court made that dicta comment about inability to cope, and I think that's causing some concern here. But we don't have a woman in our case that has an inability to cope. The evidence in our case showed she had an inability to consent. It wasn't about coping with day-to-day stresses. She had an inability to consent. So I don't think that last phrase that's been discussed is really of any relevance to our case here.
But I think what I'm trying to ask you here is the jury was just given the definition applying to all of the counts of a present reduction, meaning substantially impaired. And what it did is it found that the first count, which had to do with the drug, in addition to her cognitive situation, it found guilt on that, but the other situations which didn't involve the drug, which was the temporary impairment, that Mr. Gasper was not guilty. So it seems like in the jury's mind it made a difference whether she, based on the question, whether she had taken the medication or she hadn't. But in the end, as I discussed with you earlier, it looks like the jury really didn't believe the state's witness, and the only place that it found a guilty verdict was when she took the medication. So I'm saying, would this be harmless error based on the way that the verdict came out? I know you're not conceding error in the instruction, but just assuming that there was.
Well, I guess it's always possible. Any trier of fact or any jury can decide something in the privacy of a jury room on some basis they shouldn't. But I think that is speculation, and that's why we try to avoid it. I think at the end of the day here, the state's theory was sound. It was supported by their expert, and the jury ostensibly chose to believe that for count one.
If we find plain error in the instruction, would you make the argument that it was harmless?
If this court found plain error
in the instruction,
absolutely. If it finds plain error, but this it would, to find plain error, that you would have to say that based upon, I'm not really sure how it would find plain error here.
Thank you.
It's been approved for cases just like this for many, many years, and I think this case is just one that falls right in line. The propriety of the instruction should not be affected by the witness's offhand comment about taking her sleeping pills that night. That doesn't render the theory unsound or the jury instructions improper. I think everything was done appropriately here, Your Honors. I don't have anything else to add unless this court has some more questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Hoffman, you have 6 minutes and 33 seconds remaining.
The court, I think, has pointed out what I think is the problem with the instruction that was given, the original instruction on substantial impairment. In State versus Zay, this court pointed out two types of impairment. One was a present reduction in the victim's ability to either appraise the nature of her conduct or control her conduct. And the second type of substantial impairment is what the court called a general deficit. And it gave an example of an IQ score. And it said it was different than the present reduction type evidence. This was a case where the state wanted to prove a general deficit. And the jury was instructed about a present reduction. I don't know why the jury instructions don't include both types of substantial impairment, but they don't. 50702A1 of the Ohio jury instructions defines substantial impairment only in terms of the present reduction, and it doesn't mention the general deficit as a type of substantial impairment. It needs to. And in this case, when the jury was instructed and charged to look for the type of evidence in the form of a present reduction, it looked to this incidental, unintended, and insufficient evidence of drowsiness from baclofen, which incidentally is not a sleeping pill. It deals with muscle control. For this reason, and it was plain error because it clearly affected the outcome of the trial. So I'm asking again that the court would reverse and allow Mr. Gasper to have a new trial. Thank you.
Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement, and you will receive a decision from the court.